Friday. I am Ira Flatto.
And I'm Bill Nye, sitting in as a co-host today. If you've ever had abdominal surgery, you might know the drill or the procedure. Before you hit the hospital, you might be fasting, a liquid diet, maybe a colon cleanse. And then after the surgery, you might be put on IV. You might have painkillers, opiate drugs. And you got to go hungry for another day or two before it is, as they say, safe to eat.
Yeah, I hate it when all that happens. But, you know, our next guest says, forget about it. He says there's not much science to support that pre-surgical protocol anyhow, and that patients might even recover more quickly without all these precautions. Robert Sima is chair of the Surgical Safety and Quality Committee at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota and professor of surgery there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Sima.
Thank you for having me, Ira.
You've upset the apple cart here. You're saying, what, from a surgeon's perspective, wouldn't you prefer that patients hold off on the foods and the colon cleanse and all that stuff before you operate?
Well, it's not me upsetting the apple cart. It's about 15 years of work across the world by a number of surgeons that have been looking at why do we do these things and is it the right thing to do for our patients?
Mm-hmm. So why is it better not to do those things? What's the advantage of not doing those things?
Well, I mean, it always has to be tailored to the individual person and the procedure, but you know, when you go into surgery, it's a trauma, no matter what it is. It's a major undertaking for your body. And just like anything else we do in the real world outside of medicine, you know, as I say, if you run a marathon, you don't ask the marathon runner the day before not to eat because your body needs to be prepared. It needs to be able to re-energize itself and rebuild itself.
I thought, I thought this procedure was for you, so that when you guys go cutting people open, you don't have to deal with half-rotten, intestinal
stuff that might
product.
Leak out of the intestines and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, that's really sort of the issue. Is we do a lot of stuff that's for us that we thought was for the patient, but maybe looking at it the other way is what's best for the patient might actually help us, and if we can change our ways of doing things. That benefits everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is.
I had an appendectomy where one of your colleagues was very careful and diligent. And I appreciate that. But there was a lot of that sort of dietary trouble. Now, what about after surgery? Because I remember being charmed by the menu where the guy checks checks boxes on a list of things that the patient's allowed to eat. And one of the first thing was gruel. I was given some gruel. Is that still, you're saying you wouldn't do that anymore after, in this example, an appendectomy?
No, I think even for appendectomies, I think most surgeons right now would just go ahead and feed you. So for, let's say, a bigger case, like a colon cancer case, what I do, the night of surgery, the patient's given a menu that's basically open to whatever they feel like eating.
Wow.
It's not for me to pick what they should or shouldn't eat. It's basically for them to decide what they would eat. And, you know, people used to think that you couldn't feed anyone. You had to have a tube in your nose for, you know, a day or 2 days to protect the work that the surgeon had done. Well, there's really been no science behind that at all. And really, it just is associated with other complications. So a work of a lot of surgeons have shown now that a lot of the things that we've done in the past really don't add up to patient benefit. And we should try and get the patient back to being who they were beforehand, starting to eat real food, getting up, walking around, avoiding systemic narcotics. And we've seen real benefit to that, not just here at the Mayo Clinic, but at other institutions that practice this way.
So the patients are recovering faster and better also, is what you're saying.
Yeah. The idea behind this is not to get patients out of the hospital faster. The idea behind it is to accelerate their natural healing so that they're ready to leave the hospital sooner.
Now, do your colleagues disagree with you out there in the world? Are you having trouble selling this idea, or are people embracing it?
There are different groups of people that have different views. I think that most, more and more surgeons are understanding that you can do many of these things, many of these things, and not have a bad outcome for your patient. The real issue, though, is it has to be really coordinated care. It has to be an integrated process where what the anesthesia, what our anesthesia colleagues are doing, can be complemented by the way the surgical practice takes care of it. So you have to have an integrated care system where the anesthesiologists, the surgeons, and our nursing colleagues are all working together. And I think that's really where it becomes difficult to implement such a process.
Yeah. So it has to be the philosophy of the surgical team, not just you saying, hey, you know, I'll let my patient eat breakfast this morning.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, our anesthesia colleagues, anesthesia has advanced tremendously. They can do all sorts of special blocks and things like that, but they require that the patient's also going to get oral pain medicines in order for this to be effective. So if they do those blocks in before a colon case, and then I decide as a surgeon, well, I'm not going to feed them, I'm not going to give them oral medicines, then what the anesthesia colleagues have done, it was all for naught. So you really have to be coordinated in how you design this. So in our system, we had an anesthesia lead at Dr. Adam Jacob, who was able to put together the plan, and it meshed very nicely with our team's design for what we were envisioning. Working with our pharmacy colleagues, we were able to pull together an integrated plan of what medicines to use, when to use them. And that's really what makes the difference. And so, that's what I think the problem is outside of other systems. They may not be as well integrated.
I have to say, my niece is an anesthesiologist. And she was talking recently about how they all introduce themselves before the surgery. They never used to do that. And doctor, I just want to tell you, for those of us on the other side, what, you guys don't know each other? You just show up and start cutting? What the... I mean, well, you know, I've assembled a lot of electronic equipment. Yeah, we talk it over. Hand me the wrench. Hey, give me, you know, like, that's really, well, to us on the outside, it's surprising you haven't done that for centuries.
That is actually the case. You are right. We started here about five years ago now, every morning with outside of the OR, a briefing where everyone... meets our anesthesia providers, the nurses in the room, the surgical assistants, the residents. We have our names up on the boards outside the door. We talk, and it really is a way of improving communication. Yeah. I can tell you when I was in training 20 years ago, that was not the case.
And that was only 20 years ago. Yeah. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're advocating no colon cleanses here. Now, we've done a lot of stories about the microbiome, the trillions of bugs, beneficial bugs living in our colon. If you clean all of those out with a cleanse, could that be one of the reasons why you feel so terrible when you're coming out of surgery?
I think it's hard to say about the microbiome. There is some debate about that. But even on NPR's website this morning, there was a study about the microbiome and the effects on that, about health and exercise. I agree with you. I think the more you do to disturb the natural body before you go into surgery, the harder it is to recover. The first thing we want to do is have people resume normal bowel function. If you've completely depleted everything in their colon, it may take a while. And so we try to avoid that. Now, there's always a counterbalance to everything in life. And there are some concerns that operating in the field with a lot of stool could be problematic and increase risk of infections. There's some studies that show that. There are a lot of studies that haven't shown an increase. So you have to balance those things, but clearly you're better off not disturbing the person, letting their bodies do what they normally do, which we don't want to have people, starving themselves the day before surgery. Eating regular food is the best way to prepare for a big event. You don't want to, don't want to go and not sit there and not eat and then have diarrhea all night.
Changing the subject to a little bigger picture, then, do you have an opinion about fasting in general, and especially this expression cleanse? Somebody so-and-so is going to get a cleansing diet. I'm going to cleanse myself. Yeah, every year I cleanse myself so that I'm clean to do something. Do you have an opinion about that?
Well, I'm not sure that really has the huge effects people think.
I think it doesn't. I'll just tell you personally. Yeah. The people I've known who fasted end up weak and not especially good athletes the next day or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said for, of course, a diet that has less additives in it in general, a lot of other types of chemicals and things. There is a sense that using more natural foods and better moderation of your diet will help. But, you know, the idea that you're going to detoxify going for a short period of time changing your diet is unlikely. Your body just doesn't do things like that.
Let me see if I can get a quick call in here from Benny in Tucson. Hi, Benny. Quick.
Hi, it's Bonnie.
I'm sorry.
One of the side effects of this protocol lands on women who go into the hospital in labor. That's just in case they have to go in for surgery. And not being able to eat while you're in labor, I mean, that's hard work. That's not laying down, getting cut into. That's one of the reasons I've chosen not to have my babies in the hospital because, you know, women need to eat when they're working that hard.
Yeah, good question. Good point. Can you expand that, doctor, to labor? Or
well, I will say one thing, though, is not eating. The reason in labor is slightly different. Now, the reason they worry is that if they have to do an emergency intubation, they don't want, your stomach full of hamburger or something like that, because that poses a real risk to the mother. So there is some moderation there, and I think a lot of labor practices are changing that somewhat. We're talking about basically we don't allow people to eat, up until, a minute before they go to sleep. You need to have the stomach empty. And so we basically don't allow them to take anything in up until 4 hours beforehand. Mm-hmm. So that's a safety measure. And I think that's what really the concern is in labor. Now, if you have a 2 or 3 day labor, I agree with the caller that not being able to eat for something as physiologically as stressful as that is going to be problematic.
All right. Dr. Seema,
but the real issue.
Thank you for that. Well, it's great. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
Robert Seema of the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about Mars.